Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
TV.
On the radio.
Roll it there, Colette.
Hey, how you doing?
Bazinga.
Well, I didn't expect the kind of Spanish Inquisition.
One for everybody in the audience.
It's going to be legendary.
You just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
What do you know about the royal family of Aldovia?
Wait, the king died last year, and the prince who's supposed to take over is a total flake.
Flake, international playboy, and scandalous socialite. Playboy Prince Richard took off before Daddy died, which wouldn't be a problem, except they have this interregnum thing.
The time between two reigns?
Right. In Aldovia, it's a maximum of a year, which is about to expire. So, they need a butt in the big chair by Christmas Day.
But if the prince is MIA, then what happens?
That's exactly what you're gonna find out.
Ah, Aldovia, a strange little tiny European kingdom where, weirdly enough, everybody speaks English with an American accent. That's a clip from A Christmas Prince. It's streaming now on Netflix. James Dempsey joins us once again. Could it be any more derivative?
Yeah, I have a very, a bizarre selection of shows today. It's because we're so close to Christmas, but yet not properly close enough to talk really about Christmas. But I felt this was my Christmas throw-in for the year.
Yeah.
Because this, obviously, right, this is made for TV, in this instance Netflix, but made for TV Christmas movie, of which there is this absolutely blossoming industry. So the Hallmark Channel in the US, Hallmark of the card fame, they have produced, maybe a couple of hundred of these in their lifetime as a TV channel. And they now have this thing called Countdown to Christmas 2017. There'll be Countdown to Christmas 2018 next year, where I believe they made about 30 original movies. Now, original I'm using in the most liberal sense of the word, because every single one of these is as cookie cutter as the cookie making scene they have in every single one of them. It is about a woman who's generally this sort of benign, blonde, forgettable one. This time she's a New Zealand actress named Rose McIver, who people might know from iZombie, which I'm not sure if it's still on or not, but was a bit of a cult hit a couple of years ago. And she plays a journalist, and by journalist I mean she's a copy editor at a New York blog who really wants to be a writer, but she's told by her editor that, no one is willing to go on this all-expenses-paid trip to Aldovia, was it?
Yes,
To see the prince, so you have to go to it.
Yeah, who would?
Who would, right? And she goes off. And she gets to Aldovia, where a man robs her cab. Can you guess who he turns out to be? And she arrives at the castle. There's a press conference that doesn't happen. And she then manages to sneak her way into the palace and be hired as a tutor to the prince's sister. Now, the prince's sister is her own completely unique character, because the queen, the king, the mother, the prince, soon to be king's mother, is Alice Krieg, who was the Borg queen Star Trek years ago. She's 63 years old. The prince is, at his youngest, 27, but he's really about 33. The princess is 8 years old. and so the queen is serving.
You're getting bogged down in details.
The queen
man.
Is serving postmenopause realness to an nth degree here that is incredible. So this film, I don't even need to explain anymore. You know exactly what's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
What's going to happen 15 minutes before it does. But it is so.
This is there was a film with Julie Andrews in it where she was the mother, and it was the
Princess
same thing.
Diaries, with Anne Hathaway.
That's what this is.
Basically, it's cut from the same cloth as that. You know exactly what's going to happen. But this has now achieved a sort of so bad it's good cult status.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I do really recommend people watching it, because I cackled laughing at so many times. I was texting a friend of mine who was watching it at the same time. He was watching it with subtitles, and there was a part where she's in her office chatting to her two workplace friends in the office, and they're referred only as man and woman in the subtitles. in the subtitles. There's like the most hilariously silly scenes where, you know, there's a lock picking scene where it's literally stick a hair clip into a door and open it. There's, you know, bizarre costuming choices. The whole thing is silly and it should be watched with like your cattiest, meanest group of friends because it is a kind of a real collective viewing experience. But I picked it to talk about it because it is representative of this kind of movement of made-for-TV movies, which is this massive but yet very cult industry. Mm. So as I mentioned, Hallmark is producing them, you know, by the dozens annually. But they're kind of, they kind of are an interesting piece of pop culture because they primarily star these actresses who have sort of fallen out of the limelight in their maybe late 30s, yeah, early 40s, who aren't getting cast in anything else. You have people like Lacey, I want to say Chabert, who is formerly of Party of Five and Mean Girls, not Lindsay Lohan, not Rachel McAdams, not Amanda Seyfried, the other one. She's being cast in these and they are being viewed by about like, you know, 3 million people, which is not an insignificant number of viewers. Mm. In modern day American TV, even though it, particularly in by Irish TV, would be absolutely insanely massive, but they are sort of this cottage industry that come out every year and now are sort of developing a sort of a like a place in the pop culture, like a knowing place in the pop culture. They're kind of like Christmas jumpers. You know, there were no Christmas jumpers until suddenly then everywhere you went in town on the Friday and Saturday nights before Christmas, you saw men wearing these naff Christmas jumpers, and now this industry that is sort of reaching its peak and will fade away. This is what's happening on your television in a way akin to that.
But this kind of movie has existed for decades.
Definitely. But the specifically like the Christmas type one that we're getting flooding our
And no, because it's like the other day, because my kids like love anticipating Christmas, and so there's like a number of Christmas TV channels.
Yes.
And
I'd say morning to noon this kind of stuff.
And there was, yes, exactly that. And there was a show called Christmas in Connecticut, which starred Diane Cannon, who was in something, I forget. Well, this was made in the
80s. Nominated years and years ago. Yeah, that's all I know about her.
Tony Curtis, who's obviously saw better days, who played this deranged, what seemed to me to be a coke addled character, but he was doing it for camp. And Chris Christopherson. Who has seen better days as an actor and country legend. And it was an utter piece of crap, but it was, I'm stuck for money or my career is on a dip. Let's go and do
this.
What
I thought was funny about this one was I looked up the director. His name is Alex Zamm. And I looked at his other titles. So this is A Christmas Prince. He's also made A Royal Christmas, Crown for Christmas.
know your skills and play to them.
Stick to them, yes.
Yeah, okay, but if it's a very, very bad example of this, then that might be fun.
I think there is enough fun in this. It is sort of, it's so charmingly stupid that I think it would be impossible to hate it. And it's only 90 minutes and it just sort of all flies along and zips along and there's just sort of enough constantly taking place and always enough silliness to just sort of marvel at that I think it's quite an enjoyable thing. I think this like could become almost like a proper cult classic that stands the test of time over Christmases to come.
I'm going to check this out and see does it actually work that way. Right, a couple of bits of TV news. They're going to reboot the US version of The Office. When did that stop, actually?
So it stopped, I'd say, about 5-6 years ago at this point and really had eclipsed the UK Office in terms of, I would say, popularity as well by the time it would round up. It did make 9 seasons of, you know, 20-odd episodes, which is a lot of episodes of the show. NBC is the US network that bought the rights to the show and produced it. And they had a gamble by bringing back Will and Grace earlier this year. I don't think it's made it to our shores yet in any sort of legal way, but has been a big hit, for them, and was nominated actually for a Golden Globe in the comedy stakes for Eric McCormack, and has been already greenlit for a second season. And a month before it sort of was brought back, the president of NBC, Bob Greenblatt.
Everybody knows that.
That one. Yeah. he had identified The Office and 30 Rock as shows he would like to bring back. Mm. And specifically The Office, this looks like it is going to go ahead, that they're already casting for a new boss. It will be set... It will be The Office. I mean, it'll be, you know, Dunder Mifflin Paper Company in Scranton, Pennsylvania. The question is, who'll be back?
Yeah.
Because, you know, with a show like that, it did produce some big stars. I would say the ones most likely to not be coming back are Steve Carell, I would say. He had left the show before it ended anyway.
Yeah.
And I would say Mindy Kaling is probably too big for this now, particularly as she's going to be in Ocean's 8 and A Wrinkle in Time next year, which is really going to like solidify her ascendancy into movie stardom, we'll say.
Yeah.
Everyone else, I think, is fair game to be back, because what else have they been doing in the years?
Fair enough.
They've been doing Hallmark Christmas movies.
How depressing is that? In 30 Rock, I wonder who'd come back.
Well, yeah. I don't see that coming back, because, well, I don't know, if they throw money at people, they're probably worth it anyway.
Yeah, it'd have to be an awful lot of money, I would have thought. George Clooney is going to make a TV series for Netflix.
Yeah, so his production company are currently working with Netflix to create this 8-part series that's going to be about the Watergate scandal. So there isn't really much more to the story than
that. Is it a documentary series?
No, it'll be a drama series about, I think, the rumour mill is saying that it's going to be about the people who did the actual bugging, rather than, we'll say, Nixon himself.
Okay, that's interesting.
But it is interesting because they are sort of
who did that.
I mean, I know, you know, Richard Nixon getting into the helicopter with the V sign, and that's about it. But, and Deep Throat, I guess. But apart from that, I don't know, like, anyone who did the actual bugging. So I guess it's interesting from that perspective. And George Clooney has sort of passed form with this kind of political intrigue. Mm. Like, that's dime a dozen for him. So it's going to be written by Matt Charman, who wrote the screenplay for Bridge of Spies, was Oscar nominated a couple of years ago for that. But apart from that, there's not much known.
Still,
about
it. It does sound very interesting, because he does have, as you say, form doing that, and he's done it well in the past. All right, we do have to take a break. Couple more shows to talk.
We were made homeless because the landlord asked us, could she have the house back for her brother and his two children? We went to view roughly between 60 to 70 different properties, and we didn't even get a phone call back, not even off one. So we had to present ourselves homeless to Fingal County Council. I had a meeting with London Monday morning, and he offered us this place here in the Peter MacVerry Trust. He says, I promise you, he says, you won't be over there that long, but we're still here 14 months later.
There you go. That's from The Big Picture, Homeless. Obviously, that was transmitted during the month of November, on a day in November, I should say, on RTE, but you can still watch it on the RTE player. Depressing viewing.
Yeah.
So I don't mean that as a criticism.
No, absolutely not. And this was like kind of a real example, I think, of why it's worthy to pay your TV license. You know, that this is sort of like public service broadcasting at its absolute best. And you don't get something like this on Netflix, right?
Yeah.
You know, you can pay your subscription to Amazon, you can pay your subscription to Sky, but they won't go out with a camera and uncover this kind of story, right? So I thought this was kind of, this RTE deserves a lot of credit for producing this. So they filmed across this one day in November various different many different aspects of homelessness in Ireland, and condensed all of that into essentially an hour-long documentary in the 3 weeks since then, which is a very tight turnaround for a delicate and difficult thing to produce. It reminded me a lot of last year. They had an excellent, I think it was a 6-part series on RTE called Keeping Ireland Alive, which was about the health service all across the island of Ireland across one day during the summertime. And it was really, really well made, beautifully shot, and really sort of captured Ireland in this very interesting and intriguing way. And this was just like that, in the sense that you got various sort of snapshots of homelessness. Now, I really didn't do my due diligence and take down anybody's name that was in the show, so I'm sorry that I dropped the ball on that, and I have to only refer to them as this man, that woman. I should have taken their name, and I'm sorry for that. But anyway, in the clip that we heard, you know, this was a woman whose son has cerebral palsy. I think she's been homeless for a long time, living in accommodation. She and her son and her daughter make a 2-hour commute every morning to go to their school.
God.
And
because obviously, because people who live in hotels, you can be bumped out of that hotel at a moment's notice.
Yeah.
Move to someplace on the, you know, if say you're in Dublin, for instance, move to the far side of the city and you're left bang.
But
in
your
that
children
situation.
Are still going to school in Palmerstown, and you have to get them there. So, I mean, this sort of image of her pushing her son in his wheelchair across the city to Dublin Bus to get a 2-hour bus ride or whatever to Palmerstown was the one that sort of stuck with me the most. But there were plenty to choose from because it really was very sort of demonstrative of homelessness as an entirety, because you had rough sleepers and intense rough sleepers sleeping on cardboard. You had people serving breakfast, you know, Capuchin monks. You had people, medical professionals that would go around in a mobile sort of GP clinic. You had a hairdresser who had just sort of fallen by the wayside and had now found herself homeless, and what this had meant for her. It was very, I would describe it as quite all-encompassing.
Mm.
Now, the sort of other side of the show was it was 90 minutes in total, and there was this hour-long, as I said, snapshot documentary, and then that sort of segued into a 30-minute panel discussion. Not really panel, because it was Miriam O'Callaghan talking to people in the audience, and then David McCullough talking to the Minister for Housing, Owen Murphy.
Yeah.
And really, I don't know what more that 30 minutes adds to the show, because there is no overnight solution to this. You know, right? So you get this very powerful piece of documentary that's showcasing the scope of homelessness, revealing that like 8,500 people are homeless in Ireland currently, which I looked up is more than the population of Port Arlington, right? The entire town of Port Arlington.
Yeah.
So they are homeless, but then you have this discussion which really doesn't really offer anything beyond we're trying. No, you're not. Yes, we are. No, we're not. Yes, you are. It becomes this he said, she said political punching, you know, match that doesn't give you an answer, because there is no easy solution to a problem that is years running and can't be solved with the flick of a switch. It was sort of a frustrating end. And I as a viewer, I found it sort of almost a pointless end, because it was just point scoring by everyone, offering statistics that don't... Statistics wash over an audience. What you had instead was 60 minutes of real people, real flesh and blood people with
and
lives and stories.
It, yeah.
And that paints the picture of homelessness. That should be, you know, impetus enough to try and solve this crisis. We don't then need... And I'm not trying to punch any politician either. You know, I'm apolitical in this. But you have Owen Murphy there just... unable to say. He can't say I'll solve homelessness, and it is frustrating as a viewer having watched this 60 minute long expose on the breadth of homelessness to then have a minister be unable to resolve it. It sets him up very negatively, I would say, to an insurmountable challenge. He can't solve it.
And who was Miriam talking to then?
She was talking to various people in the audience who would, some of them had featured in the programme, some worked in homeless charities. They were even, not bickering I would say, but sort of contradicting each other in all the points they're making. All the 30-minute talk revealed was that nobody seems to know how to solve this.
God. Right, we'll go on to our third show today. Some might find this equally as depressing. This is, you know, basically Top Gear by another name. The Grand Tour, new episode streaming every Friday now on Amazon.
That is what our celebrity guests will drive.
It's not really a car anymore, is it?
No, it's half a Romeo. That's what I'm calling it.
Now what?
They whiz round this track here.
It's cutting off.
Why don't you have a go?
I'll have a go.
That'd be hilarious.
All right, what's wrong with it?
Well, you cut it in half.
Yes, but even James May can drive it.
Why, oh, it's impossible. Ah! Where is reverse on the... Oh, it won't reverse. Well, it's got the bloody wheels at the back.
There you go. Let me ask you a counterfactual question.
Okay.
Say, for instance, you had exactly this programme with this massive budget and obviously the amount of imagination that goes into it, but you didn't have the three presenters. You had three completely different presenters who you didn't want to put in prison. Would it be an enjoyable show?
I do think it would be more enjoyable than this, because what I really dislike about this, beyond the fact that the episodes are 70 minutes long, which is a grueling, torturous experience for anyone, is that I think any charm that they had, you know, when they were on the BBC 12 years ago, is that fair? I don't know, 10 years ago at least, any charm that they had as these sort of grown up man children has completely worn away. To me, this is like, I thought this is almost like an interesting comparison to House of Cards, right?
Okay.
Because this is the show that launched, Amazon as a global video
brand. Because this is the biggest
brand.
TV show in the world.
Right?
Yeah.
And they decided to roll it out across the world based on this show. And obviously Netflix did the same with House of Cards, right? So in the last couple of months, this terrible stuff has come out about Kevin Spacey. Not as terrible stuff came out about Jeremy Clarkson, but still, what he did to that Irish producer was not great, right? Mm-hmm. And yet you see him sort of he's sort of this symbol of getting away with it. You know, Jeremy Clarkson is now loaded. He bet up this guy and now he's
yeah, but the thing with like Jeremy Clarkson is a dick. That's his selling point, is that he's a dick.
I don't know if it is.
And there are dicks all around the world go, I want to be like Jeremy Clarkson.
Oh, I don't know, Sean. I think we are like, I think.
So I've been told to stop saying dick by my producer.
I think we're post D. I think as a society, we are post D. I think we're just over that kind of obnoxious alpha male. I mean, he stands there in his bootcut jeans and you just want to like punch him. It's just.
He'd love that.
It's so unlike. I found the comedy is really stupid and their delivery is like has no freshness. I mean, it's so learnt off and been rehearsed and like it's supposed to be off the cuff, but like this cuff has been tailored to within an inch of its life. It's just I couldn't stand it, and to have to watch 140 minutes of it in one evening was painful. I just like even what they did in the first episode, they drive around in these three supercars, you know, and these cars are worth, I don't know, like five times my annual wage. I don't know, right? And I watch these three obnoxious, loaded, middle-aged men driving through Lucerne in Switzerland, driving on cobbled streets, which I saw them do on the BBC 10 years ago, getting stuck in tight alleyways, which I saw them do a year later on the BBC. They don't even have any fresh ideas to what they're doing in the show. To me, the whole thing was tired and it made me even more exhausted.
James Dempsey, you want to say dick, really, don't you? James, happy Christmas to you. Thanks a million for your contributions during the year. We'll talk to you in the new year. James Dempsey, there, we're going to take a break. Back in a couple of minutes. Come out after this.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.